If every spirit returned giving precisely the same information with reference to facts pertaining to the spirit world, would you be any better off, as spiritualists? I think not. You would say at once, they always tell us the truth, we can always depend upon them. We need not exercise our powers of observation. They are always on the right side. Let them lead us. Now they come with all the imperfection of human life resting upon their spirits, and by their acts, by all they say to you, and all they do with reference to you, you know that they are still human and fallible. What is the result? Why, you are kept in constant activity with regard to your spiritual belief. All the powers of your better nature are perpetually being taxed to know what is the best way, what is the truth. Instead of allowing any other spirit or spirits to decide for you, since you cannot place implicit faith upon them, you fall back upon yourself. You measure them by your own ideas of justice, you throw them into the balances of your own being, and you weigh them there, and if they are found wanting, your reason decides. Your reason can very easily detect whether or no they are wanting in all that makes up a perfect spiritual being. It would not be well for you, as spiritualists or Christians, to be shown the better way at once. Life is a struggle, and not only a struggle for the angel world, but a struggle for you who dwell here in time, and through these hard struggles you attain knowledge, you become wise for yourselves. You do not gather that wisdom which belongs to any other spirit and appropriate it to yourselves, but you gather that which belongs to you as individuals. You bring out all the powers of your inner life, and make them strong by action. By Father Henry Fitz-James, December 8, 1868. Question. Is the growth in the spirit realm, and are the processes of assimilation and education the same as we find here in this material condition? And are the chemical changes at all analogous? Answer. There is indeed growth in the spirit world, and the various processes through which the spirit passes are indeed analogous to those of Earth. Each spirit receives from all its surroundings, and gives, in turn, to all. The process of give and take is by no means entirely of Earth. It belongs to the spirit. It exists through the sphere of mind as of matter. All the various chemical 247 chances through which the body, the physical body, passes during its pilgrimage in earth life, have their counterpart in the spirit world. The chemistry belonging to earth is divinely and spiritually represented in the spirit world. It is carried far beyond that of which your human senses can take cognizance. There is that change which is in itself analogous to the change called death. There is a gradual waste of spiritual forces, a gradual accumulation of newer forces. There is no such thing as rest, in the absolute, anywhere in the universe. Question. You closed your invocation with the term Father, Son, and Holy Ghost. How are we to understand that? Answer. The term is used simply to convey the idea of the past, present, and future, an all-sustaining life that ever has been, that is, and ever will be. Question. Is the life principle manifested in the vegetable and animal kingdom, and in man, the same in essence? Answer. In essence I believe it to be the same, but marked by distinct degrees through form. The indwelling life, the essence, the all-pervading principle that changes the forms of matter and changes your thoughts, I believe to be the same. Question. Does it attain its highest possibilities when it culminates in man? Answer. By no means, for man, as such, is only a few steps higher than his brethren of the field. We are apartment to place too high an estimate upon self. Question. Are we then to understand that there are races of beings in the universe higher than man? Answer. Oh, yes. Because there are conditions of mind far superior to those with which you come in contact, far superior to any that have an existence on this earth, or any other, at the present time. Life is a school, and we are all pupils therein. We never abandon the school. The master is ever beyond us, ever ready to teach us something that we have not yet known, consequently we are ever being drawn out. When we attain one glorious height, lo! There are more beyond us. Question. By a clergyman. Are there any beings superior to Jesus Christ? Answer. Oh, yes, very many. Question. By clergyman. What kind of beings are they? Answer. Beings like himself, who have had larger experience. It is the experience one gains in the world of mind and the world of matter that makes the human and divine glory. Question. By clergyman. Have these superior beings passed through humanity? Have they been men? Answer. Yes, I so believe. Question. By clergyman. Jesus Christ was not, then, born of the Father, as he declared himself, when he said, I and my Father are one. Answer. Oh, yes, he was. And you and I may assert the same with as much truth, since we cannot live apart from the Father, since we have no existence apart from his, the great existence called life, we and that are one. It cannot be otherwise. Question. By clergyman. Why did he deny that the Jews were the children of God? As where he said, because ye do not the works of God, ye are of your father the devil. Answer. And by that statement he showed very clearly that he had not attained the highest wisdom, that he was human, as he was divine. For, had he attained the highest wisdom, surely he would have known that the Jew and the Gentile were alike precious in the eyes of the great All-Father. Question. By clergyman. Who is the more inspired, Moses or Christ? Answer. It would be very hard to determine, but it is not hard to determine concerning the order of inspiration. Certainly Moses did not have as high an order of inspiration as Jesus the Christ. He ranked very far below him. Question. By clergyman. Then Jesus was not the light of the world, if he had human imperfections and follies in him? Answer. Oh, yes, he was a light of the world, and a very great light too. Question. By clergyman. Yet you acknowledge he lacked wisdom. Answer. Certainly, he did not possess all wisdom, and yet he shed abroad those divine truths that he had gathered from all his surroundings, as none had ever done before him. And the light of those truths comes down to you of today, you fall down and worship them, and it is well. But in worshipping the Spirit of Truth, the glorious truths that were given through Jesus, you are very apartment to also worship the form, the name. This you should not do. We are very apartment to do it, because it is very hard for us to separate the life from the form. We are more apartment to worship the church than to worship the Spirit of the church. Question. By clergyman. Is death inevitable, or is it the consequence of sin? Can it be avoided? Answer. Death comes as the inevitable consequence of natural law, not as the result of sin. Science has proven that to be true. Ignorance determines otherwise. We are told of a fall, away back in past ages, and, in consequence of that, came sin and death into the world. But as the light of a newer and diviner dispensation dawns upon us, we see the folly of such a belief. Science tells us that death is the inevitable result of law. Change must come to these forms. They cannot exist in their present state but a certain length of time, then they must be resolved back again to their primal elements. It is not, by any means, the result of the sin of one pair or a thousand pairs. Question. By clergyman. Is there any such thing as being translated, as is recorded of Elijah, that he never tasted death? Answer. No, I do not so understand it. The ignorance that surrounded the common people of that day gave rise to such a story. The priests, the heads of the church, knew better, even then. Question. By clergyman. Then that is a false story? Answer. Absolutely, falsely rendered in your record. Question. by clergymen. Is Jesus risen with that body which was nailed to the cross? Or where is that body? Answer. Gone back to its primal elements, lived again and again in 1,000 times 10,000 forms, for aught I know, but never resurrected from the dead, as your record affirms. Question. By clergymen. Then the apostles were false witnesses? Answer. By no means. They so believed because Jesus had the power to make himself an objective reality to those minds and those human senses. He took upon himself material conditions, and was, to all intents and purposes, living and acting through the material form. They saw it, they felt it, it walked with them and talked with them. But was it the literal body of Jesus? Oh, no. Question. By clergymen. Did he not declare unto Thomas that a spirit hath not flesh and bones as ye see me have? Answer. Certainly he did so, the record says, and he invited one of his friends to thrust his finger into his side. But we do not affirm that this body, this objective body, was a spirit. Oh, no, it was a material body which he had gathered from the elements, precisely as spirits do, under certain conditions, from your media today. It is being done today. Jesus had the same power. Question. By clergymen. Then the angel that told them, "Ayo, he is not here, he is risen," told a lie. Answer. No, he was not there, he had risen. The body was not the man. Question. By clergymen. What became of the body? Answer. We are told that it was taken away by the nearest and dearest friends of Jesus. They, like you of today, loved the body, and were not willing it should fall into the hands of their enemies. Question. By clergymen. Then the Jews were right in saying the disciples had stolen the body? Answer. They were right, certainly. Question. By clergymen. Then the apostles were all liars, and the Jews were right? Answer. No, they were not liars, but the Jews were right. Question. By clergymen. But the Jews declared that the disciples had stolen the body, and you confirm the same from the spirit world. Answer. Yes, but they were not liars, because they did not say the body has risen, but he has risen, meaning Jesus. The spirit, not the body. Nowhere in your record can you find anything that will determine concerning the resurrection of the body. The disciples did not say, "We have not stolen the body of Jesus," they simply said, "He is not here, he has risen." So he had. Question. By clergymen. But it was the Jesus that was laid in the tomb that was meant. Of course we all understand that it was the very same body that was nailed to the cross. Answer. Oh, yes, you understand it so, because you are a partment to deal more with the body than with the spirit. Was the man the body? You will say yes. I say no. It was the thinking spirit, not the body. What had Jesus to do with the dead body? Nothing at all. So the disciples declared that the living spirit had risen, they said nothing about the body. Question. By clergymen. But these declarations don't hang together. Either all Christianity is a humbug, or these declarations are false. Answer. So far as the Christian Church understands Christ, there is very much a very mixed up with their understanding of him, because they have worshipped the body, they have talked of the body, they have prayed to the body. That has been their ideal. I was a believer in the literal resurrection of the body of Jesus Christ before my death. But I know better now. The whole Christian world has indeed been imposed upon, but by its own ignorance, by nothing else. Question. By clergymen. But what assurance have we that we are not imposed upon here? Answer. None whatever, nothing that you can absolutely rely upon. Question. By clergymen. Then we may declare that we are now imposed upon, as well as the Christian world has been. Answer. Certainly, you have the right so to do. It is incumbent upon you all to weigh and measure everything by your own senses. Never believe a Paul, or a Moses, or a Jesus because they are such. Do not believe me because I declare myself to be a departed spirit returned here to communicate with you. But believe whatever seems to be true to you, and ignore all the rest. Question. By clergyman. But what is the good of having communications from departed spirits, if we cannot depend upon them? If we must take their instructions on our own judgment, I don't see any use in them. Answer. So you may say with regard to all kinds of instruction, whether through the church or the spirit world. Question. By clergyman. There is a great difference. We give authority for ours. Answer. Ah, you have a very poor understanding concerning those of the spirit world. You, like thousands of others, have placed the seal of divine authority where that of humanity alone belongs. When you shall learn that the spirit after death is human, as before, then you will cease to expect so much of them. They are fallible, like ourselves. It is only their opinions and the experience they have gained in the spirit world that they bring you. Nothing more. Question. By clergyman. Does a spirit come by divine authority to teach us this? Answer. All things that are taught at all are taught by divine authority. Question. By clergyman. I don't believe it. Answer. You have the right to disbelieve. Question. By clergyman. Lies are not of divine authority. Answer. Since I believe in one God overruling all things for good, of course I recognize the divine authority running through all. Therefore, to me all teaching is of divine authority. It may not be so to you. Question. By clergyman. Are the most infernal lies by divine authority? Answer. All that do not agree with our best judgment are lies to us. It matters not what they are to anybody else. That which we cannot conceive to be true is not so to us. The Jews believed Christ to be a liar. Not so with the Christian world. But were not the Jews honest? Surely they were. Question. By clergyman. Then there is no such thing as absolute truth. Answer. No. There is no such thing as absolute truth. Rest assured of that. Question. By clergyman. Then I say you are of the devil, for God is absolute truth. Answer. But since we cannot measure God, we cannot bring that absolute truth down to our comprehension and make use of it. Therefore, we have no absolute truth, because, if we had, we should have all of God, which we have not. Our time has expired. We must leave you to your own opinions, trusting you will in time grow out of the darkness around you as an individual. You have the right to your opinion, as we to ours. We are all marching towards the same great light of truth. We are all under the benediction of the same great Father. It matters not what we believe. This was at page 255. By Theodore Parker. December 10, 1868. Question. Cannot a person standing by the side of another benefit him spiritually? Answer. Certainly. I believe that the mission of Christ on earth was not alone for diseased bodies, though he healed the sick and restored to the blind their sight. He did many so-called wonders in the material line, but he did many more in the spiritual line. He was capable of healing the spirit, of restoring it to the normal or happy state, and what is true of him is equally true of every other healing medium. Question. Jesus said, Lo, for 18 years has Satan bound this woman. Are all diseases the bindings of Satan? Answer. Yes, you may as well call them that as anything else. The bindings of ignorance, or of the lesser good, may as well be called Satan, or Lucifer. Whatever name you give it, it is still ignorance. It is still the lesser good. Question. Swedenborg says that all disease is communicated by evil spirits. Is he right? Answer. He is right, only he is misunderstood. Disease is spirit, and because it makes you unhappy it is evil. Therefore it is the action of an evil spirit. The potato rots in the ground. It is acted upon by an evil spirit. This evil spirit runs through all the vegetable creation, through the mineral, the animal, the spiritual. But, it has ever been, and is to the present day, largely misunderstood. Of course, you are aware of that. By Father Henry Fitz-James, December 17, 1868. Question. Is the deity a being, or is he a principle pervading all nature? If the latter, why do you address him as a being, in the invocation? Answer. That our God is a personal, and also an impersonal God, is equally true. Since the God power or God life is everywhere, he, it, or she is of course personified everywhere. I believe in the worship of all that is worthy of worship. If it is the flower, let us worship the. If it is the human soul, let us worship the. If it is a lofty thought, let us worship the. Wherever we see anything, or perceive any state, either of mind or matter, that is worthy of worship, there we should worship. All spiritualists, I believe, consider God to be an infinite principle pervading all forms, occupying all space. I believe this. I have seen nothing during my life in the spirit world to cause me to believe otherwise. I did not believe it when here. But the book of life hath been so widely opened to me since death, that I can come to no other conclusion than that God is a principle pervading all forms, and occupying all space. God is in the atmosphere, and is the atmosphere. God is in the sunlight, and is the sunlight. God is the sun and the shadow. He is everything, and is in all places. It is absolutely useless to endeavor to confine God to any particular place or state of being, for could we do that, we should rob God of the God power. We should at once chain this great eternal principle, this infinite life, to finite space. We should at once bring it down within the scope of human analysis. And I, for one, am glad we cannot. But we have been so in the habit of addressing this deity, this power of life, as though it were a man or woman, a personality like ourselves, that it is very hard to change our course, and indeed it would not be well for us so to do, because, as I before remarked, our God is a personal God, and therefore it is proper that we should thus address him. By William E. Channing, December 21, 1868. Question. Will there not soon be more distinct communion between the spirit life and the earth life? Answer. If your correspondent means to ask if there will not be very soon a more general and direct communication between this life and that which is to come, I shall answer, just so fast as you are fit to receive communications of an emphatic kind from the spirit world, you will receive them. You seem to suppose that that world is situated far from you, when it is really in your midst, and the communications coming therefrom are as closely allied to your own souls as they can by any possibility be. Every soul seeks for light from the spirit world, for new revealments concerning this modern faith, is constantly expecting something greater, something more clearly defined, something that shall answer the call of human nature more definitely, something that shall appeal emphatically to the senses. This is well. And will their expectations be realized? I think they will. The spirit world is constantly making great efforts in your behalf. Societies are being formed all over our spirit world for your good, for the good of all those minds that are bounded about by clods of clay. One set of minds can be reached in one way, and another set in another way. One demand the alphabet of the science of life, another group demands something higher, and so on. All are calling for certain degrees of these spirit revealments. 258 Every soul will be answered, I believe, in due season. 9. If spiritualism were proved false, what effect would it have upon the history of the Bible? Answer. To my mind it would have a very serious effect, because by and through the life of spiritualism, ancient spiritualism, the Bible has its existence. It lives through that, if it lives at all. So to prove that spiritualism were false, would be to prove that all the circumstances recorded in the Bible were equally false, for they every one of them stand upon the spiritual platform and exist by spiritual life, if they exist at all. By Theodore Parker, December 22, 1868. Question. Why cannot mediums give full names as well as parts of a name? Answer. There are various reasons why this cannot always be successfully done. In the first place, there are very few mediums through which the full tide of spiritual, personal information, or inspiration, call it by what term you please, can be received. Mark me, there are very few through which the full tide, it may come in ripples, it may bubble upon mature and break, but the full wave can come only through a very few, compared with the great whole. Now suppose, for instance, I were writing a communication through the hand of a medium. I may have what I call magnetic control, that is to say, I may have been successful in cutting off the electric and magnetic current running through the arm and thence to the brain, thus conveying impressions. So I might have a hand and arm to use as I would a pencil. Well, what then? Why, the medium is looking on, sees what is written, and knows, 9 times out of 10, when 259 the power is diminishing, because of the tremor that passes through the arm. The outside spirit is losing control, and the indwelling spirit is resuming control. The medium can tell that, and so he says, this message is almost finished. Now, I wonder what name will be attached to this. There comes the obstacle which interferes very much with the giving of the name. The positive brain is exercised, consequently it cannot be given. When mediums learn the philosophy of this, they will do differently. They will see to it that their wills are abstracted from the work of the spirit. If they do this, it will be very much easier for the spirit to finish up what it began. It is hard to give a name, because, at that point, the spirit of the medium becomes positive. The forces of the spirit have grown less. They have about exhausted their power with the medium, and just as they are going to finish up and sign their name, as I before remarked, the positive power of the medium comes in and interferes, so you don't get your name. Now, do not say there is some fraud because we have got no name. Rather say, it is something we do not understand. Let us look into it, analyze it, weigh and measure it, bring all the powers we have at command to ferret out the cause of this deficient communication. If you took half as much pains to do this as to find fault, it would be very much better for you and for us. Pardon me, I am a plain-spoken individual, used to telling the truth in very plain terms. Question. How is it that some spirits can control so soon after they leave the form? Answer. Some spirits happen to be very fortunate in having spirit friends who know how to return, who understand the modus operandi. Consequently, they bring their friends to some media, who, they know, will assimilate with their magnetic life. What is the result? Why, they are forced right back through media mystic life, whether they will or no. Forced, you say? Yes. That is the word I intended to use. Question. I asked because it has seemed to me as if some spirits were forced into possession of this medium. Answer. They are absolutely forced. They come within the magnetic attracting power of the media, and it absolutely forces them to come into bodily control, and then they may as well speak as do anything else. It is easier to speak than not to. Question. Some who have passed from this life return and tell us that they have no remembrance of any other existence previous to that commenced on this earth. If, as has lately been maintained on this platform, the soul ever has been, is, and ever will be, in what respect does this lack of continuity of memory differ, as regards the individual's identity, from total annihilation? Of what avail is it to the thinking part we call I? If the essence of man is immortal, if that essence is not eternally connected with his individual being? And how can this be otherwise done than through the memory? Answer. Memory is subject to the call of external circumstances. Now, always remember that. Memory is subject to the call of external circumstances, and may slumber in some of her parts for thousands of years if external circumstances do not resurrect her.